Welcome to the Marketing Solutionaire, where we dig into the roots of great enterprise marketing. I'm your host, Chris Kaler, founder and CEO of Emsphere. In this podcast, we seek out the secrets to success in driving high utilization, adoption, and value from marketing technology, with an eye toward building a community of excellence that drives our field forward together. So whether you're an established enterprise marketing leader or on your journey to become one, you're in the right place. And now, on to the show. In today's episode, I'll be speaking with Thomas Stilling, the newly appointed chair of the Creative Operations Events for Henry Stewart. Thomas has led digital transformation programs for organizations such as 20th Century Fox, Warner, Disney, and National Geographic. Most recently, Thomas was a senior leader at Forrester Research, overseeing digital strategy and production. Thomas, thank you for joining us today on the Marketing Solutionaire. I know you were rushing back from LA, attending the Henry Stewart Dam LA event, which we will talk a little bit later on in the discussion. But as I always like to do, why don't we jump right in and you tell us a little bit about Thomas Stilling, maybe something interesting some other people may not know about you, and then stretch that into your professional journey.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for, you know, having a conversation today, Chris. I always like when we chat.
Thank you for being here.
There's a lot going on. And what's, you know, sort of the fun fact for me is that I started my career originally as sort of a classical musician, and I was a clarinetist and pianist and studied classical and jazz. And from there, at a certain point, went to a jobs fair, and KPMG was hiring sort of off type, because they'd made the decision in that galaxy far, far away that they were hiring too much of the same mindset, and they were looking for some creativity and innovation and something different. And, you know, ended up in a job interview on one day, flew to Boston on the next, and was handed my role and a salary on a post-it at the end of that moment. So, but my original career was as a clarinetist, and at the DAM conference, they asked for, you know, there was a question about what's your favorite tune or what's your favorite song? And I would reference sort of some classical or some jazz, and everyone else is, you know, Taylor Swift and all sorts of other names. And one woman came up to me and she said, I just so appreciate that you have this background. It just makes it so much more interesting, because you're not just thinking about like the technical aspects. You come from like a creative place and you're looking at things a little differently. So yes. And I live in Salem, Massachusetts, in a 304-year-old haunted house.
I have actually been up there. I was born in Concord, Massachusetts. Grew up
very nice.
As a youngster through third grade in Acton, Massachusetts. And we always made the voyage up to Salem around Thanksgiving, and mom and dad kind of taking us through the villages and telling us the story. So that's interesting.
Well, there's definitely a lot of tales around here. It's plenty to chat about if you're coming through Salem or coming through this region. Like, the history here is amazing.
And if I remember, if I was paying attention, which I probably wasn't as a third grader, isn't there a House of Seven Gables?
There is. It is right down the street from us, the House of Seven Gables. Absolutely.
Yeah. All righty. Well, why don't you expand that a little bit and tell a little bit about some of the employers and clients throughout your professional journey that you've been doing this consulting and thought leadership and digital transformation and marketing technology.
Oh, yeah. No, it's exciting. And I think each of the roles and any of the jobs that I've had in the past, and the clients I work with, are all about change. And how are they both working with change, working through change, some of them confronting change. And each one of the roles has been an opportunity, usually with a company that was either working through change themselves or helping clients work through change. So when I was at KPMG and then subsequently at Bearing Point, you specifically were brought in to help on methodology development and processes and that workflow. What's the structure for how you're going to do work? How are you engaging your customers? How are you going to market? And that progressed as I moved from the East Coast to the West Coast, started working with media and entertainment clients, working with, you know, Warner, and if you remember TV Guide back in the day, and then was based at Fox. And Fox was going through, like all the studios, a really large transformation of how do you move from physical media in DVDs and Blu-ray to the new digital landscape that we are all familiar with streaming services, with interactivity, with VR, with AR, and what does that look like? And so began a journey working at on the studio side at 20th Century Fox for about 10 years. And just really putting together both the foundations and the creative possibilities of what does this change look like. And it was so exciting because, you know, all industries have fun and wonderful sort of areas that you can really dig into. And I think to be successful, you look at both the strategy level and then you look at like, all right, what's the nuts and bolts? And you would cover that landscape and those altitudes on a daily basis. It was very exciting. And so went from 20th Century Fox, moved back east and joined a startup as head of product, where we were driven by customer needs. And it was also helping customers change and accelerate their services and product to market. So working with digital assets, whether it was video, whether it was static images, and what does that look like? And then spent a lovely 3.5 years at Forrester Research building up digital strategy and production. And in the last year, have been independent. Independent working with clients, both B2C and B2B, and also affiliated with Rutgers University, teaching and creating courses on creative operations, digital asset management, and AI, which is the layer over everything right now. And if you are not looking at AI and automation as part of your business, let's have a conversation and talk about the why and the where. You see a lot of conversations on it, but I still think many corporations are looking at it as that shiny disco ball in the sky. How do you make it practical and not forget all the good things you've got in place before jumping off without a foundation? But that's a deeper, we get to go in a couple ways
sure,
on that.
Sure. Well, let's scratch the surface on that. And I'm wrapping my head around that the common thread throughout your professional journey beyond being a musician and artist is change. And that's a big ball of information. But in today's landscape, you know, what I'm seeing is that change is the amount of time in between when something changes is just reducing as opposed in the past. So why don't we transition, and I'd love to hear your point of view about your perspective on change, whether that's in the past. And let's talk about specifically in creative operations. From, mm-hmm. from inception to the current challenges they're experiencing today, and then embracing the future.
Oh, very much so. You know, and it's interesting. I think wearing a couple, you know, related hats in both digital asset management and creative operations, one of the questions that came from the conference this week in LA was, okay, if we are at 4.0 of our evolution here in these fields, what does 5.0 look like? And there were a couple of different answers from the panel. And my proposal was, look, you know, let's realize that you are in a moment of convergence. If you go back even a couple of years ago, the professionals and the mindset in the digital asset management space and in the creative operations space, I think were very different. And as they've been evolving, as consumers and businesses are looking for more and faster and different ways of engaging, you now have what is a convergence of things that look like DAM and digital experience platform and creative operations. And the challenge is that this speed of change, as you're saying, is it feels like or is perceived to be more rapid than in the past. So, you know, we're getting hit with AI, you're getting hit with automation. And one of my colleagues that I'm a dear friend with, you know, she sort of talks about like, oh, it's, you know, the blows just keep on coming. And then you wake up in the morning and you read about new tools and new technology and a new way of thinking. And so when you think about where is the field going, you know, from inception, it is this convergence moment. And looking at the generations, that are coming up now, what they call Generation Alpha, which is sort of, you know, 2010 up to about present. What is that consumer experiencing and what do they want to experience? And they look at things very holistically. They might not see the nuts and bolts, and they certainly don't have patience for any challenges that come with that. But if you are a practitioner in the field of creative operations and you are trying to have your business advance and go to the future, you still need the fundamentals. You still need to go down into that archaeological dig and understand the layers of data, the layers of processes, and how you can move it forward, lest you buy, you know, that shiny disco ball and attempt to attach it to just, you know, a poor foundation. I was thinking about quicksand. I don't know if it's the best analogy, but, you know, if you spend X number of dollars on a new tool and then 6 months later are confused about why your KPIs aren't getting better, maybe you should look to not forgetting the lessons you learned in the past about building good foundations.
Very interesting. So looking at that change, kind of wrapping my head around that, summarizing it, some of the current challenges, the speed of change, also the personas. You mentioned the Gen Alpha, the characteristics of that population in terms of how they operate, how they think, in terms of the patience of wanting to have it all work and work the first time. When you're talking or have talked with your past employers or your clients, let's talk a little bit about embracing some of these challenges and how do you set a North Star for the future and embrace some of these changes, and where do you start?
Yeah. And for many organizations, it starts with perception and people and the culture they have. One of the workshops that I often do, both as a leader within an organization or if I'm working with a new one, is something I call, you know, the 1% of possibility. And as you know, if you grow up in a certain environment, if change is happening so fast, people get, you know, fatigued. It really is challenging on the speed of the change, but it also can be challenging on letting go of past concepts and just embracing what could be new. And in the exercise, we talk about, all right, set those things aside. What's the 1% possibility in a year or in, you know, 6 months that you want to see change here? And what could that look like? And you give people permission to ideate and to release themselves from some of the structures and the frameworks that they might feel like they're stuck in. And so often for organizations that are struggling with change, you start there. You start with the right conversation. And then when they open up, it's all right, let's talk about what are your customer needs? How are you focusing? And it's a very product mindset. So let's hear what the customer is telling us. Let's listen to that data. And then you build on that. And that's when you can start making choices about what's the tool that I need, you know, in my MarTech stack, or how do I want to look at my org? I think sometimes people get stuck in this, in old methods of like reinventing and moving people around in an organization. And I think one of the worst practices that sometimes companies fall into, through no fault of their own, is when they bring on a new tool and they're trying to do something new, they copy and paste all of their old processes into this amazing new tool, and then wonder why it's not working. So maybe there's a couple of points in there that sort of get you get your smile going.
Absolutely. So that's very interesting. You got me thinking about in terms of this fatigue and speed of change. Are you seeing the operating models inside of creative operations teams and organizations? Are you seeing or helping advise on what that should look like? How are the operating models different than before? And what should some of the best practices be when considering a change in your operating model?
Yeah, and I think there's a real interesting dynamic. And for companies that have recognized that they either need to be faster or the scope of their engagement needs to be larger, or they're just looking for, you know, what are those performance indicators that are going to, what do they want to move? there's a recognition that you have to think about what does that operating model look like. And you know, whether you're going it alone, whether you're working with a partner, what does that mean? And I think being thoughtful again, just going back to what do we want to achieve? So if, for example, and this is, you know, by no means an advertisement for any particular tool, but if you're working with, you know, a CMS or you're working with a tool like Workfront, you're trying to build certain products and get them out as fast as possible, and that rhythm and speed is increasing, how do you approach it from an internal success point of view? And then what do you look for with your partners? And I think there's a balance there that they're being really thoughtful. And there isn't one perfect template. You know, every organization brings its own culture and its own relationships. And what you want to be able to do is like sort of look at the ingredients and then you're balancing it again. And I think for companies that are giving it focus and attention and have some time, you can sort of tweak that a little bit. All right, how do we bring this up a little bit more? How do we sort of like shift our dependencies here? Do we even need to do some of this process anymore? Or can we bring in a tool or someone to help us with that? So a lot of it is about defining what's that balance between internal and external support and then bringing that to reality and helping people through that change.
Yeah. We've all heard, you know, the phrase that marketers are faced with today in terms of needing to do more with less. But now it's add to that, do more with less, faster, quicker, right? And so,
well, there's also the other problem, which is do more with more. You know, working with one of my clients, which has been really fun.
And when I said less, I didn't mean to interrupt. From resources, your team.
Oh, from resources, yes. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And I think so. For the reason I was smiling, true, more with less on resources. What has happened in some organizations is the more with more on tech, and so, you know, well-intentioned plans to bring in all these tools at once. And so you have probably, you know, the worst of multiple potential dynamics, which is let's do more with less people. And now you have more tools to learn. So if I'm a human and I am working on, you know, ad copy, or I'm working on, I'm a PM and I'm doing workflow, you know, maybe I'm advising on sort of the strategy with the legal department on how to do clearances, whatever the specific capability or function is. Now I'm also confronted with, as a professional, how do I learn all of this tech to be successful? And it sounds like a good problem to have with many tools, but actually, I think what I've seen in some organizations is they've gotten a little bit tool diverse. And so now you've got to recognize that there is synergy in having a central sort of truth, having a central work and sort of automation area. Like, there's real value in simplifying for any role, how and what they work with, so that you can do more with less potentially. But always with the caution that less is not always better. But think about that recipe. What do you need to do? And what are the pieces you're bringing together to be successful? That's where you approach it. And then you can make thoughtful decisions.
So that phrase should probably be repackaged. Marketers need to do more with less resources, but with more technology, and those two together, the resources trying to keep up with the rapidly changing technology presents a big challenge to these companies. And, you know, I was curious, mm-hmm. in the creative operations teams you've seen, how are they tackling that in terms of, you know, are they outsourcing some of the stuff? Are they insourcing? What types of different permutations are you seeing out there with the creative ops teams trying to that are struggling with that?
Yeah, and I think the layer that's on top of a lot of these conversations is how do we as an organization and as a team use AI? And we talked about it this week at the conference. And, you know, one of the questions came from someone who said, look, you know, my organization bans AI. We are not allowed to use it as part of our tools. However, it is starting to creep in. And I smiled and I asked the question. I said, all right, so how many people in the room have a mobile phone? And, you know, of course, everyone raises their hand. I said, well, 100% of this room has access to AI. and it's not through your organization. And so you, I think for AI specifically in terms of the struggle is what are the principles to bring that capability and that technology into the organization? And then again, how do you use it? And for creative ops, I see two sort of categories and tracks of focus. One is on what some describe as more pure generative AI, you know, the creation of graphics, the creation of video, the creation of copy. And then the second one is, how do we bring AI into our workflows for productivity? So areas like auto tagging, image recognition, sentiment analysis, which I think is an amazing and sort of fascinating moment. But for both of these, it comes back to, you know, what are the goals and what do you want to accomplish? And so AI has sort of become a catalyst, a driver, the foil, the nemesis, all of these things and more for creative operations teams, which maybe in some cases have leadership that are just saying, go do more with less, but make sure you're using AI. And so the question is, how do you approach that? And you want to do it in a thoughtful way. And hopefully the organization gives you time to take that beat to be successful. You know, what is it? 90% preparation equals 10, you know, 100% success. There's something in there that I remember, but yeah.
There you go. Well, that's probably a good transition, because when you were talking about, hey, I was just talking about in terms of generative AI, I know you were a panelist on a generative AI panel in LA. So let's go up a little bit higher in the clouds. And we've mentioned you were in LA, the Henry Stewart Dam event. Why don't you tell us a little bit, maybe for our listeners that aren't as familiar with it or have never been or are thinking about it and wondering if that's a fit for them. So tell me a little bit about that program, because I know there's, you know, DAM conferences versus creative operations. The one in LA was focused on DAM that you participated as a panelist, and you talked a little bit about before you were a contestant on Stump the Consultant, you know, when you were talking about, and I heard through Devin Burleson that you got good points for your answer talking about the DAM 5.0. But tell us a little bit about Henry Stewart, where you just came from, and what you're about ready to embark on as your new role of as chair of the Creative Operations Program.
Oh, absolutely. No, and I appreciate the question. And Devin is very kind. And just as a little bit of a setup, the Stump the Consultant moment, it ends the entire conference, and you put three or four people up on stage, and we wear noise canceling headphones, so we can't hear each other's answers. And then the audience votes real time on what they believe is the best answer. But that moment sort of really encapsulates what's so special, you know, especially post-pandemic, of people being in a room together and having those discussions and conversations. And I think when you look at where traditionally digital asset managers have originated from in their professional careers, you could often do two broad categories, one being coming from library sciences and sort of that discipline, and then another maybe tech or IT, and then growing up into a digital asset management role, which even though it's been around and the conferences have been around for quite some time, in some organizations is still quite nascent and still growing up, or maybe they're still, you know, pondering what to do with it into the future. And so this special moment this week really continued to show the evolution of who are digital asset managers, what do they do for companies, and what is their impact. And part of the conversation was the role of this space is continuing to grow. And as a DAM manager, you know, many of the sessions focus, I think in the past, they would often focus more on the technical. Now what you're talking about is like, what are the capabilities? How do you structure the work that you're doing? What are the insights that you need and the innovation you need to be successful? And so much like the discussion forums in the classes we teach on AI and DAM, and, you know, in the rooms post panels and post presentations, it is people from multiple industries coming together, whether it's gaming, food, retail, you know, manufacturing, and saying, well, what are your challenges? What are you doing with your digital assets? Oh, you have video. I have a lot of static. Well, how do you work with that? And the sharing of the ideas in this space is, you know, really driving so many conversations and driving a lot of the future possibilities. And then you sort of add on or look through a different lens of creative operations, which comes from different categories of professionals who have grown up in different ways. And what you saw, or at least I saw at the DAM conference, and what I expect we'll see in creative operations in May in New York, is this confluence, this convergence of both needs and skills. And there is an opportunity for professionals in both areas to grow and to help make themselves and their companies successful by approaching it with a bit of a blend between creative ops and DAM. So I think these fields will, you always have the lens that you look through that's, you know, your sector and your point of view, but they are definitely converging in a way that many of the conversations you could drop into either or and feel very comfortable and not quite sure which one you're at.
Yeah. So what do you attribute this blending or convergence of, you say, of specifically to these events and what's going on in these companies of the DAM group with the creative ops group? Is it because DAM is central to more and more things and it's just touching more parts of the enterprises?
Oh, absolutely. And I think you've really hit on what is one of the underpinning and underlying, you know, reasons for why DAM has become so central. And not that it wasn't before pandemic, but when we all went remote and companies had to interact and engage with their employees, their customers, their partners in different ways, anyone working with paper had to immediately start accelerating. You know, on-site promotions had to be done. Activations had to be done differently. And that created this surge of asset creation, which then created a need for people to really look at their ecosystem. You know, I worked with one company that had 7 different DAMs. They had 4 different CMS. They had a couple of PIMs lying around, some baby DAMs. And then when you're trying to move with speed and focus, it's really challenging to do that. And so as we come out of pandemic, then you hit the next driver, which is AI, and especially for concept and ideation work. Now that you've got so many derivatives that are being made for across industries in the creative space, that capacity and need is growing even more. I remember one presentation, there was a lovely presentation from Netflix earlier in the week. And they talked about how within video and within their static assets, they are tracking 17 trillion different marker moments, metadata moments, capturing sort of frame by frame what's happening in that. So you have an explosion of the assets, and then you have a exponential explosion of the need for really targeted, refined metadata, whether that's technical or descriptive or another version. But together, you have DAM at the core of that success. And so you need the tools, the processes, and most importantly, the people to make that happen.
You know, as you're telling that story, I'm kind of thinking as you're speaking, it's kind of interesting. I've been in this space a long time. And of course, the technology is the foundation, the enabler, right? And if you think about the two different kind of populations, the software platform vendors, you got the companies who are purchasing it, implementing it, using it, that everything that is coming out, and we talked about rapid changing and the pace of change, everything is always classified with an acronym, DAM, PIM, CMS, right? But that's
alphabet soup.
Right. So at the head, you know, leading the charge, thank goodness, are these technology providers. But it also kind of starts because they have to market their product. They got to wrap some messaging around it, and everything gets a label, right? we're in the metadata world, so it makes sense. Well, this is DAM, this is PIM, this is CMS, and when someone wants to distinguish themselves as a platform vendor, it's a new acronym. Then that gets implemented within these enterprises, and over time, as you talked about the maturity, they start seeing these different acronyms and words blending together. Any thoughts on that, or am I way out in right field of pontificating on something that, hey, let's move on, but which is fine, but it's just.
No, I think you and I are seeing similar trends. You know, it's so interesting. The from a procurement perspective, there's often, and this is not a rule, but there's often, if you've got a good procurement team, they want to help you, their business partner internally in an organization, on defining what you need. And in that process, then procurement often will have conversations with vendors and say, we are looking for this list. So if you've ever gotten an RFP or an RFI and you're responding to one of those, what is the checklist of things? And they want to be able to do it. You want to do apples to apples. You want to make it an objective and a fair process. You know, and I've worked on both sides of the selection, both running them, participating in them, and also submitting to them. And so you have on one part this driver that's, you know, sort of almost desperately looking for clean answers. How can we get exactly what we need? And then you have the reality that the business and the marketplace, whether it's B2B or B2C, has changed in so many different ways that the old concepts and how you would implement the technologies may or may not be as efficient and really meet your needs, even though on a checklist version they might. So for example, if you go back to just a little bit of time, integrations, and I think many vendors still do it, you know, really trumpet how you can integrate with everything. And I think what smart companies are doing right now, and what, you know, organizations who are doing selection products, is they're sort of stepping back a little bit and saying, okay, yes, I need an asset repository. And yes, I recognize, okay, I understand metadata now. Maybe we're also considering rights issues. Let's look at that. You know, where are my assets going? What are they doing? We're looking at, you know, derivative capabilities and templates and automation. You know, even if they're not expressly looking for AI, you know, there are certain capabilities that they would like to have to make that better. And when you put that needs and requirements list together, it's getting more difficult for that one player to do all of that. In the past, I think what you're seeing now is that you've got some vendors who, if they're telling a really good story, are saying, absolutely, let's be transparent. We can help you on this part. And here's the advantage why you want to look at us. We're centralized. You know, you don't have to task shift. People get tool fatigue, bouncing from tool to tool. In terms of the setup process, you get integration fatigue. And integrations aren't always very solid. So sometimes those fall down. And then when they fall down, what do you do? And so you're seeing, I think, smart companies recognize that it's not everything in the kitchen sink that you want to go to your customers with, but it is what are the right tools that come together. And that may, from a, you know, a generational or ancestral sort of point of view, feel more like DAM. Maybe it feels a little bit more like traditional creative ops, maybe, you know, productivity and workflow. But I think the smart companies are making the case and the narrative for their customers saying, yes, we are a DAM and we don't want to, you know, put ourselves or you in a box. Well, let's talk about our capabilities. And I think a great example of that is the evolution of the DXP, you know, more letters, but digital experience platforms. Sure. That's a relatively new concept and it pulls from a couple of different fields. So you've got that change here and you've got that dynamic and it really is driven by those factors. You know, you look at the tech integrations, you know, you get tired of stringing 10 different tools along. And at the same time, because of open source and because of shared tool sets, vendors can add capabilities much quicker than in the past. You're not talking about a development cycle of 12 to 18 months on a roadmap. You're doing it in three.
Yeah.
So,
well,
you know, a lot there, but hope, you know, again, you know, see, I agree with you.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, I do want to squeeze in one very quick topic in terms of, you've mentioned the word blending. Well, you're a good blend of artist, musician, you know, consultant, technology. But one thing we didn't touch upon is your background as an educator and your involvement with, you probably saw David Lipsey this week. And of course, a lot of people who are involved in that community are familiar with the Rutgers program. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement with the Rutgers Dam program? And I believe you've developed a couple of courses.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I've heard you use the phrase always be learning. And that's so true. You know, at the conference this week, we talked about being curious and being open. And with as an educator and partnering in, you know, these type of courses and also working with organizations to help upskill their own humans, curiosity is where it starts. And so the DAM program some years ago, I think we're going on 7 or 8, really started with the premise is professionals aren't getting the training and the expertise they need to be successful. And how do you help bridge that? So from a mentorship role and from a, you know, how do you help guide and build? What does that look like? And so part of the fun, and I really do think it's been fun, is developing digital asset management governance course. And governance may not sound like the sexiest thing that you ever want to talk about, but I'm telling you, once you do governance right, you will never go back. So that course I've been teaching for many years. And then in the recent years, really looking at creative ops and partnering with other professionals on how do you retune this? What do the capability models look like? What are the skills that someone who's in this profession or shifting into this profession need? So, and that covers a range of topics. And then coming together this year, it's been really exciting to launch a certificate program, AI and digital asset management.
Oh, that's exciting.
And we were very purposeful in this moment to, you know, you have a lot of courses out there that I think hit the engineering, that hit prompt generation, that hit facets of this. And what we tried to do was something that had a different kind of arc. So let's talk about the context of AI, a little bit of the history. Let's talk about some of the risks. You can be open about the risks and what development, but still be really positive, enthusiastic. And then talking through capabilities, you know, what does AI look like in the wild, we call it. And then our capstone effort with that is, all right, you are now making the strategy recommendation for your company. What does that look like and what are the components of that? And the most exciting part really is the discussions, because you have students, as I said earlier, like, you know, from so many different fields exchanging ideas in a really supportive and open way. And so these learning and education moments are me as a continuous learner, because, you know, to build these courses, you really have to draw upon what's the latest, what's the refresh moment. And then you read the discussion posts and you interact with the students and they are teaching us, I am sure, more than we are teaching them. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, I can tell you're super passionate about that, which is why I wanted to squeak in that facet of your background and interest and contribution to this whole DAM, MarTech, Creative Operations ecosystem. So, why don't we wrap up? I'm taking a look at the clock here. In terms of just little snippet sound bites of advice to professionals in creative ops, I just heard you mention a couple of things, which I believe you're going to lean into. But what advice do you have for whether they're executives, leaderships, managers in creative ops, or individual contributors?
Yeah, no, be curious. Be open, you know, whether that's the 1% or the 100%, make sure you're open to the possibility and the reality of change. And just be flexible. I think the days of this is the set way we're going to do it, and here's our 3, 4, and 5 year plan are behind us. You know, things can change quickly and rapidly. And so if you're open and curious and you're learning, that's where I would go.
Well, as we say here at M-Sphere, change happens, let it flow. And being curious, open, and flexible is 100% aligned to that. Thomas, thank you for taking the time, especially in a busy week that you had this week. I wish you luck. Why don't you mention the date again for the Creative Ops, where you're now the chair in New York?
So Creative Ops in May in New York City is May 16th. It's actually 4 tracks. So you're going to get creative, you're going to get production, you're going to get photography. And I think the best physical space to be is literally in the lobby in between the separate tracks, watching all these professionals come together. It is going to be an amazing day. And the theme actually is the power of change. So everyone is invited, and please, you know, reach out to me on LinkedIn or my Gmail. And I'd love to tell you more.
Terrific. So reach out to Thomas, whether you want some clarinet lessons, you want to get some coaching, lean into him as an educator, or lean into his consulting and digital transformation. So thank you very much, Thomas.
Thank you, Chris. It was a real pleasure. Look forward to seeing you again.